Hey everybody, welcome to the show. It's obviously a podcast. I'm your host, Mike Schaefer. This is Mini Manual number 7, which means it's episode number 17. And man, time, it moves quickly, like Ferris Bueller likes to tell us. And, you know, when I started this, a couple months ago, it just seems like time flew by and here we are. Recording episode number 17, Mini Manual number 7. And I thought about what to cover, and at first I thought that I've always enjoyed bird watching. And I'm not sure if that's entirely accurate. I did grow up out in the country where there wasn't as much traffic. It was pretty calm. It was pretty mellow. A good place for birds to be. Lots of trees, and I did watch birds. My dad always had bird feeders. We always saw hummingbirds outside our front window, and the back window, for that matter. Or maybe we just switched it. I can't recall, but either way, there were always birds. So I think that has something to do with it. But a couple of summers ago, I had the privilege of going on a trip through work to Africa and going on safaris. And when you go on a safari, if you have, you know, all the different wildlife you see, and it's truly breathtaking. If you haven't, you might have seen it on TV, Planet Earth, things like that. All of the animals, the giraffes and the elephants and the lions, other animals that you see, the monkeys, everything. But I went on several safaris and always exciting to see the animals. But as we kept going through and seeing all these animals, what started to stand out was all the different birds that I saw and how different they were. And it was pretty fascinating. So I wanted to share, and I know nothing about bird watching. I'm very much new to it and a novice. So I wanted to share a good way, a how to get into bird watching. And there are a number of sites out there and books out there to help introduce you to the world of bird watching. The one I found was written by a man named Brandon Michael Loden. And I really enjoyed his approach to writing an article through there's medium.com. There, it's like a subsite, Bees Reads, and he has an article on there about, it's titled How to Infiltrate the Weird World of Birdwatching. And I really like his article so much that I'm going to share it with you here, and hopefully this will help you. If you're interested, if you haven't thought about until now, but want to try it out, help you infiltrate that weird world of bird watching. So this is How to Infiltrate the Weird World of Bird Watching: Your Birding Questions Answered by a Total Non-Expert, by Brandon Michael Loden. There's a type of bird called a brood parasite, which as a reproductive strategy lays its eggs in the nests of other birds and leaves them to do the parenting. Thus, some unsuspecting sparrows or warblers end up raising a conspicuously large cowbird or cuckoo, whence comes cuckold, usually at the expense of the host bird's own offspring. I, too, am an imposter. I have walked among the hardcore birders and been accepted as one of their own, despite my oversized lack of knowledge and clashing plumage of inexperience. Anything good today? A bee-binoculared stranger asked me recently on my lunchtime walk in the park. Two magnolias, a black and white, and a nice blue-headed vireo, I replied, as if I'd been speaking this nonsense language my whole life. And here's the crazy part. I actually knew what I was talking about. I really did see those birds, and identified them all by myself. You can too, and getting there may be easier than you think. How do I start? I have two key suggestions for anyone interested in taking up birding. One is more philosophical, the other entirely practical. 1. Let go of self-consciousness. This is the biggest impediment most new birders face, and it cuts in two directions. On one hand, it can feel pretty silly to stand around craning your neck up at the trees while joggers and parents with strollers maneuver around you. On the other hand, the encyclopedic expertise of longtime birders can be intimidating and may leave you wondering if you're a poser. Even with no one around to judge, the learning curve for spotting and identifying birds can frustrate beginners easily. More on tackling that later. My advice in the former case is to remember that anyone who sees you out birding either doesn't care or is extremely jealous. As for the latter, I like to recall this morsel from the introduction to Ken Kaufman's field guide. Quote, "Bird watching is something that we do for enjoyment, so if you enjoy it, you are already a good birder. If you enjoy it a lot, you are a great birder." End quote. And as that endearingly earnest quote might suggest, most bird nerds are more than happy to welcome newcomers and share the craft. Which leads us to point 2, go with a guide. The surest, simplest, fastest way to become a competent birder is to learn from an expert while in the field. Time to take that one college friend who just moved to the city, / grandma, / your latest Tinder match, up on their offer to go bird watching. Better yet, your local Audubon chapter or parks department likely offers free or inexpensive birding walks, and the right guide will be able to teach you everything I discuss here, only 10 times better than while actually doing it. If you're in the New York City area, I highly recommend any of Gabrielle Willow's excellent and popular walks. Where do I go? This is the easiest part because, and I know you know this, birds fly, so they can show up anywhere. Where you go will determine the kinds of birds you see, but you might be surprised how little you have to travel. A city park or a backyard feeder can provide as much birding action as a hike in the woods or a visit to the lakeshore. When do I go? No, you don't have to get up super early. Different species keep different schedules, but birds are active throughout the day. Obviously, you're likely to see more birds on a cool morning than a blistering afternoon, but there's no designated hour for bird watching. More important is the time of year. You'll likely see different visitors in summer versus winter, and if you're on a migration path, spring and fall can deliver a mind-boggling diversity of travelers passing through. What should I bring? What to wear, the tools of the trade, how to bird with your smartphone, and what to know before you go. Clothing. Wear whatever you would normally wear for the location, weather, and level of activity involved. Just make sure you'll be comfortable. Binoculars. With decent models starting at several hundred dollars, this can be a daunting deterrent for a neophyte. So let me start by saying you don't have to buy a binocular to start birding. Yes, binocular is correct. That doesn't mean you'll enjoy birding to its full extent without a binocular. Eventually, you're going to want a good one. Nor do I necessarily recommend buying a cheap starter. A bad binoc might only frustrate the novice further. But I encourage you to remember that birding begins with the naked eye. The purpose of a binocular isn't to search for faraway specimens. It's to get a closer look at the birds you've already spotted. The best way to learn how to work with a binny is to borrow someone else's. If you're going on a guided tour, show up early. The leader probably brought a couple of extras and will gladly show you the ropes. When you reach a level of interest and proficiency where a nice bino would be a worthwhile investment, birding sites have plenty of detailed breakdowns to help with your shopping. And as with any purchase that size, you'll definitely want to inspect the goods in person before you buy. And he's put a Calvin and Hobbes comic in here, which is wonderful. I love Calvin and Hobbes. We have Calvin sitting, Hobbes next to a tree, and Calvin says, "How much money do you have, Hobbes? Maybe we can buy Dad a new pair of binoculars before he gets home." Hobbes says, "I've got 35 cents. Calvin says, "Great, I've got $4. Let's call the store." Calvin's on the phone. "Hello, I'd like to know how much a good pair of binoculars costs. And then the final frame, there's a... That's funny. Calvin is looking at the phone, and he's shocked. And $100 to $600? Do you have any idea what my dad's going to do to me? And Hobbs says, he won't stop at killing you, that's for sure. Nice. Continuing on. Field guides. There are a wide range of burying references. In addition to many regional guides on offer, here's a brief overview of some of the popular standards. I'll offer some tips on how to use these later. National Geographic, the gold standard in bird guides, and the perfect gift for any occasion. Sibley, at its size, more of a desk reference than a field guide, beautifully illustrated with detailed descriptions. Kaufman, the fieldiest of the guides. Designed for fast reference, it fits in many decent-sized pockets. Great for beginners. Audubon, this is the one I grew up with. It comes in versions tailored for east and west of the Rockies. Peterson, a classic that influenced all birding guides thereafter, but has been outpaced by many of them. Technology. Birding is easier than ever in the age of smartphones. Before you rush out to buy any of the above books, be aware that most of them are available in some form, occasionally for free, as an app. There's a whole marketplace of ornithological tools for your phone, guides, identification wizards, personal checklists, and more. I use the Audubon app as a pocket reference and to view recent sightings at local hotspots, and sometimes consult the Cornell Lab of Ornithology's online bird guide for particularly tricky questions for identification. Cornell also provides a service called eBird, which allows enthusiasts to share sightings through their massive database, track and upload checklists in real time with the companion app, and receive email alerts on rare birds in their area. Knowledge. The more you're aware of the birds you might expect to see at a given time and place, the easier it will be to identify them, and to know if you're looking at something unusual. A quick web search should lead you to information on the common birds in your area, or you might check a local bookstore for regional field guides. So, what do I, do? Take a moment to let your senses adjust. It helps to find a kind of soft focus where you can be aware of movement and sound all around you. Focus on places birds might be. The branches or trunks of trees. The edge of a shallow pool. The mulch-strewn underbrush. If the area where you're standing seems empty of activity, move along. After a few false alarms from squirrels or falling leaves, you may actually spot a bird. You don't necessarily have to remain still or silent. Some birds are less shy than others. But it does help to stay attentive and respectful of the birds and their habitat. To that end, the American Birding Association provides a thorough code of ethics, which basically boils down to, don't be a jerk. How do I know what bird I'm looking at? Once you see a bird, watch it for as long as you can. Observe as much as possible. What shape is it? What kind of beak, wings, feet, tail does it have? Does it have any distinctive markings? Is it calling or singing? Most of all, what is it doing? How does it behave? Keep watching until it flies away. Then you can take out your field guide. The most important part of identifying a bird is observing it as closely as possible. Once it's gone, you can spend all day flipping through pages or scrolling through screens. Most guides are organized by types of birds. It may help you to familiarize yourself with the general categories in advance. You'll probably know right away whether you're looking at a songbird, or a hawk, or a heron, so flip to that section and narrow from there. The illustrations in a guide tend to draw the eye, but the descriptions are the most helpful. Few things are more satisfying than finding a picture that might be the bird you saw and reading the accompanying paragraph to find an exact description of the behavior you just observed. Don't forget to consult the range maps and check whether that bird is likely to be seen in your area at that time of year. Another element to consider, and a particularly tricky one for beginners, is the bird's sound. birds offer an incredible and melodically rich palette of calls, cries, and songs. For some species, this is the best and simplest way to make an identification. It takes some time to learn what bird calls actually sound like, so have patience. In my experience, no amount of listening to recordings will cement a bird call in your brain like actually hearing it in the wild and marveling at the tiny avian form that produced it. Remember that birds, like human beings, exhibit a variety of appearances. In many species, males are brightly colored, while females are more subdued. Younger individuals may have a different feathering entirely. A seemingly exotic bird might just be an odd-looking individual of a familiar species. When making an identification, consider the whole impression, not just what a bird looks like, but where it is and what it does. How do I share the bird I saw? Modern birders are social media savvy. Follow some locals on Facebook, Instagram, or most appropriately, Twitter to see what the scene is like and learn the relevant hashtags. BirdCP for New York Central Park, for example. Many areas have local birding clubs or associations that may offer email lists or discussion groups. You can always try uploading your checklist of sightings using the eBird app as mentioned above. And of course, if you see another birder staring up at the trees, be sure to tell them what you spotted. What are some good birds? I'm glad you asked. Here are a few birds that I consider very good for looking at. Scarlet tanager, a tropical summertime visitor and one of the easiest birds in the canon to spot. Hard to miss among the foliage on a bright, sunny day. And I'll help him out a bit here. The picture here is the scarlet tanager in the tree with dark wings, black wings, and it's a bright reddish orange the rest of the body. Beautiful bird. Prairie warbler. A small, subtly beautiful passerine with a mesmerizing synthesizer-like song. And this is the wings. It's got yellow along the throat area and around the eyes. And the rest of the body is sort of a grayish, lined with a little bit of yellow underneath and some black, too. There's a link for YouTube here and links throughout the article I'll share. But you can, I'm assuming, hear the prairie warbler sing its song. Anhinga, a common sight in southern wetlands, is this swimmer bobbing its serpentine head above the water or perching with wings spread to dry. And this bird is one I haven't seen. It's got a long neck and a long beak, long dark neck, and the wings are spread out, and those are white and grayish and almost tinged with blue. It's a beautiful bird, too. Pileated woodpecker. North America's largest woodpecker will astonish you with its powerful hammering and eerie call. And another link here, I'll share that so you can see the woodpecker in action and hear it sound at the call it makes. It has a reddish-orange hair at the top. Hair? I don't know if that's what you call it, but it looks like it's about ready to get into the wood. Pretty intense. Great blue heron. Graceful as it stalks its prey, majestic in flight, this big, beautiful bird is a thrill to see at your local fishing hole. And the heron here looks like it's just skirting above the water, wings spread, horizontal with the water, a light blue part of the wing and the outer part of the wing is a little bit darker blue, and this heron means all business, it's on the hunt. Ovenbird, this is my favorite bird. Striking coloration gives it a distinctive look to match its distinctive walk. Watch this little goofball strut. And the ovenbird, watching this just walk along the ground, and it does have a little sort of a herky-jerky walk as it's walking around the grass here in the clip, and you'll see that if you have time to watch it. Definitely do watch all these clips. Look, read into it as much as you can about birds before you go out, even just to familiarize yourself. You may not know what you're looking at, so it could help to do a little bit of research ahead of time as well, including looking into The Oven Bird. This great article gives you a nice warm-up to bird watching before you get into it. And finally, okay, but why? Birding has so many benefits, I'm not even sure where to begin. It can be a group bonding activity, or an opportunity for solitary reflection, a competitive challenge, or an escape from the daily grind. It can hone memory, observation, scientific aptitude, outdoor skills. It forces us to go, or at least look, outside, engage with nature, and appreciate the world we live in. But most importantly, I think, it teaches us to embrace wonder and awe. Birds are inherently fascinating. They are, after all, living dinosaurs. And they have long been an inspiration to humans. Larks and nightingales have prompted the pens of poets for centuries. Finches got Charles Darwin thinking about evolution. And what was the goal of the Wright brothers, if not to imitate the hawk or the sparrow? Birds are amazing. Now get out there and find some. And there you have it, just a little bit on how to infiltrate the weird world of bird watching by Brandon Michael Loden. I love this article. I don't know a lot about bird watching. I do appreciate it, and I hope this helps you get a little bit more background. If it's something you're already doing, maybe it's a fresh perspective. Maybe if you're not into it, it'll get you, you know, as he says at the end of the article, it'll get you outside, engage a little bit with nature. If you want to do it on your own and slow down and relax and do that, by all means, that's the way to do it. If you want to be competitive, and I know, I can't remember the name of the movie. There was a movie recently where it's a very much a competition to identify and see all types of different birds. Or maybe you do it with a friend, or it's a family activity. What a thing to do with your kids to get them to take the time. I really appreciated the part where he says, just watch everything that the bird's doing. You know, watch it. Watch its movements. Listen to it. Take all the time you can, and then look at your manual, look at the app on your phone. But first, just slow down and watch it. I suppose you could take notes if you wanted to, if that's the type of bird watcher you want to be. I'm sure plenty do, but take it all in first. And I love this, so I appreciate him letting me share this on the episode. I hope this is helpful. You can find Brandon on Twitter. His he's at Book Music Lyrics at Twitter, so at Book Music Lyrics. So check him out. I'll share a link to the article in the show notes, and definitely check it out. I think with birds, you can hear it, and that's helpful. Hearing how to try and get into this world, but you definitely want, it's a visual thing, and you definitely want to see what he's shared visually on his page as well. So that's all for Mini Manual 7. I hope you liked it. Definitely let me know if you get into the bird watching world, what you find. Would love to hear about that. Ways to reach the show, howtosleeppodcast@gmail.com. That's where you can email us, obviously. HowToSleepCast at Twitter, HowToSleepPodcast on Facebook. As always, have a wonderful start to your week, and I'll talk to you all soon.